Hello, pod people,
and welcome to episode 32 of the Lemonade Budget for Champagne Social Butterflies, the aspirational podcast for hopeless people like your hopeless host, Donna Scott. How are you? I'm very well, thank you for asking. I'm a little bit discombobulated though, because I've just been thrown one by my video editing software running out of subscription, just as I'm trying to send a film off for an event that's streaming tomorrow night. That deadline, tick, tick, ticking away, and it's already gone over. And I'm like, oh, I gotta get this off. And then you don't know if it's gonna update your software and not then accept your files that you've already been working hours on. So I'm like that. So a little bit fretful. Feeling a bit stressed about things. How about you? What were the old country going into a wedding cake type lockdown situation? You know, three tiers. Yeah, you get three tiers on a wedding cake and around the eye of a mass murderer on death row. So three tiers is not a good thing for us to be going into. For one thing, wedding cake traditionally is full of dead flies and is very, very hard on the icing. Plus has marzipan. You know, that's several things you don't want. Thing is, though, I'm not entirely sure how it leaves live gigs in those areas that are affected by very high. Because let's face it, the only live gig that I have got booked is in Nottingham, which is one of the areas that's affected and is very high. So that's a bit worrying, isn't it? Admittedly, it is at the end of November, so I've got a while. But, you know. I think it's been playing on my mind because I had a weird dream last night. I dreamt I'd done a live gig. And it had been a while since I'd done a gig, so, you know, the truth. And, you know, when I was on stage trying to remember my material, and I was trying to think of really funny things in the moment, like Mrs. Maisel does. And to my mind, I was actually coming up with some right gems, but nobody was bloody listening. Because it was at this caravan park, and, you know, in, like, one of them function rooms that's in a caravan park. Everyone in the audience was just old and just wanting to get pissed, and they wanted to hear a racist comedian. And then there was a guy who was like in a tuxedo and he was going to sing. And he kept telling me, the mic's fine, the mic's fine. Because mine kept cutting out. It's one of those horrible radio mics. And I was getting really upset that no one was listening to me. And so I sort of sneaked off. Because I could leave the stage and it would sneak off. I tried a bit of, you know, audience participation by walking into the audience and then found that I could actually walk through the audience and out the building. And then there was this zoo. And I went and looked at some penguins and had a cry. And then I dreamt that I was on the way home and I bumped into James Acaster at the services. And I was just like trying to convince him that my gig had gone really well. And he could see basically through me. So I just basically said, oh, I've had a gig. And he was like, you've had a gig? And I was like, yeah, I've had a gig. And that became the thing, because we don't have gigs. This is it. Oh. And what else we're learning today? We've learned that the Manchester's Frog and Bucket has been refused special funding. No bailout grants from the government at all, because apparently it's not culturally significant enough. That's what I've said. Well, what I want to say is it is culturally significant, but it doesn't mean to say that as a promoter I will necessarily book you just because you've won the gong there. But, you know, it is culturally significant. Why can't it get a bailout? I think another comedian is going to put together a streamed event to see if we can sort of like raise some funds for it. And I'd love to take part in that if I can. It's very worthy, I think. It's a smashing little place. Well, what with it being Halloween, the month of Halloween, Goth Christmas. I've got a bit of a treat coming up for you in that I've got an interview with me old mucker, horror author, Paul Mellowish coming up. But first of all, I'll tell you about my weekend because I've had a pretty good weekend. I mean, my bloke's got a job. Woo! And this weekend we treated ourselves to a trip to the cinema. Oh, I've not been to the cinema for flipping months. Oh, when was the last time I went? February. Yeah, February. Considering how often me and Neil love to go to the cinema, I bloody missed it. And we went to go and see Bill and Ted Face the Music. Is it worth going to see? I would say yes. It really is. I think you're gonna not totally capture the essence of Bill and Ted's bogus journey, or even Bill and Ted's excellent adventure with a couple of middle-aged actors who, for some reason, I think the slang that comes out of their mouth doesn't quite hit home. It just seems a bit weird that people who look as cool as Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter go with bodacious. It's kind of like weird. Because we all knew people who spoke like that in a way, even in Britain. But they've stopped. Although maybe that is the point that, you know, these characters couldn't move beyond this point in their youth where they had so much potential and were supposed to save the universe. But that said, the introduction of their daughters, little Billy and little Thea, that was really good. Because they could carry off that kind of like slangy way of talking, being young. Now, because we went to the cinema and it's all socially distant and there's not very many showings, the screening that we went to happened to have subtitles, which normally throws me off and it's really annoying for comedies. But I think because this is such a nice, simple, very basic comedy, it didn't annoy me so much, you know, that the subtitles were basically telegraphing the jokes before they happened. You know, it just felt nice and gentle. And yeah, I didn't mind it too much at all. But here's the one thing that was really, really sad. I mean, it's good in a way. We weren't allowed into the cinema, like, for ages while the attendant was cleaning the room and, like, you know, doing a proper deep clean with a fogging machine. But that's for our safety, and that's really good. But then we could hear, like, the music start, and I really like sitting down and getting settled in my seat before the movie starts, because I like to see all the bits, you know, all the adverts and everything, and all the trailers. So I was getting anxious, as like thinking, we don't want to miss the trailers. What was I worrying about? What trailers? Yeah, there were adverts. The adverts were all depressing because they're about people starving and animals in zoos and the fact that everything's crap now. People need money. The charities don't have anything. And there was one trailer. You know what that was for, don't you? James Bond. Saying it's going to be released in November. I mean, to be fair, the James Bond film does look awesome. And when it comes out, I will go and see it. Because it looks awesome. But when will it actually happen? We don't know. Oh, and when you go and order, like, Cokes and that from the bar. And I had a hot dog because they're all really cheap now. But you can't tell what kind of hot dogs. You know how they always have the names like Nacho Libre and Tennessee Hickey or whatever the names were on the hot dogs. You basically said, can I have a hot dog? Yeah, what do you want it? And then just basically just pour any sauces you like on it and a few onions. That's it. There's your hot dog. It all goes through as the same thing. To be honest, I like it that way. I much prefer it. Just give me a hot dog. Put some random sauce on it. Don't tell me what... Because having to read, you know, the kind of like firecracker chili and all of that, nah, that's too much. I mean, you know, waiting to go and see a film. I like it that way. I don't want to spoil any aspect of the film for you, but I will say the end credits probably weren't supposed to make me cry, but both me and Neil cried. We were just emotional at the state of the world. And it's what made us think of that as we're sitting there with our masks on. Oh, yeah. It could be a fun game trying to, you know, feed a hot dog under your mask. Maybe just the sausage. Because you're not supposed to take your mask off when you're in the theatre unless you're eating. You basically just pop your mask off, pop the sausage in, pop the mask back on, Nom, 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 nom. Oh, yes. So if you don't want to go to the cinema because you don't feel comfortable, but you have Netflix, I am going to recommend to you that something that is ideal for this time of year to watch, that is a gentle kind of, you see the jokes coming on mile comedy, and that is Hubie Halloween. You know, it's an Adam Sandler film. It's silly. It's about this guy called Hubie who lives in Salem, who is scared of everything, but very, very keen on Halloween because he relishes his role as a Halloween monitor and keeping everybody safe. But a lot of people really, really hate him and he's constantly being bullied. But he has his eyes still on his childhood crush, who is the most popular, most successful girl in the school. And so his loser guy, I mean, it's typical trope for a geek film, this, you know, geek comedy, is like the loser guy who is in love with the perfect girl, but she would never look twice at him, or would she? And there's like, you know, psychopaths on the loose and all that kind of thing. All of the tropes of a Halloween film, but really kind of done in a very sweet way. And I think I'm my humour is really pure anyway. I really, really liked his mum's t-shirts from the thrift store. You know, being a Chazza shop girl myself, why can't I see anything that stupid in the charity shop? Come on, flipping cancer research, sell these things. Yeah, he's got like his mum wearing a t-shirt saying boner donor. It's so inappropriate. I would wear that. Yeah, I think my sense of the pure is definitely going to come out in a film that myself and Neil have put together. Well, you know, you'll know him as Ewan Kershaw. Yeah, but we've put a film together and that's going to come out this week once we finish the editing. And it's going to be part of our Comedians Top Bottom 10s films that we're going to put out on my YouTube channel. So go and check that out. We are so silly. So, so silly. Anyway, really enjoyed putting the film together. Probably more so than I did in writing these jokes. These are the jokes that I have written for last week's news chat. Now, I only wrote 4 of them because I was so uninspired. And this week I'm just run off my feet, so I'm not sure how many I'm going to get in. But these are the one-liners that I came up with for News Jack last week. Going to start with a breaking news. The band Led Zeppelin are celebrating after a copyright appeal against their song Stairway to Heaven was finally dropped by the courts. Going on for 10 years with a number of breaks, the intro eventually ends. And fashion brand H&M has been fined for excessive surveillance of its employees. Even paired with a natty beret, dark glasses and newspaper with a hole in, it's still not a good look. Yeah, so, mate, yeah, they're terrible. Sorry. Now, I did a little bit better on with the good weeks, bad weeks, I think. I seem to be more into my good weeks, bad weeks than the straight old one-liners, which I think just shows that my brain is not wired properly during this old lockdown. So, good week, bad week. It's been a bad week for the fitness chain Pure Gym after their misguided promotion for Black History Month called 12 Years of Slave. Have you seen that? Oh my God, it's terrible. It's been a good week for all the independent personal trainers out there, as they have nothing to do with chains. See, like, now I've read it. Oh God. Yeah, don't choose anything like that. No. Right, okay. No, this one what I was riding my hopes on, but yeah, it didn't get through. Okay, it's been a bad week for 13 schoolgirls who fell poorly after they ate gummy bears laced with cannabis. It's been a good week for the kids who didn't eat them, as they're now the jammy squares, bouncing here and there and everywhere. Who doesn't like a good sing-along to gummy bears, though? Gummy bears, bouncing here and there and everywhere. Na 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 na. We are the gummy bears. Okay, maybe not. It's no Cities of Gold, is it? Nah. Anyway, would you like an interview with a famous author? What I know? Well, here you go then. Here is my chum, Paul Meliwish, in convo with me.
Right, I am joined by the fantastic horror author and friend of mine, Paul Meliwish. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. Yes. Lovely dark Sunday evening, very atmospheric. So I'm really looking forward to this.
It is. The nights are drawing in now. I've just been around my brother's and he's given me a pumpkin. So I've got no excuse. I've got to do Halloween now.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So I've known you for many years now, and we were part of the same writers group, which is the Northampton Science Fiction Writers Group. I think you joined before I did, didn't you?
I joined in 2003 because of your husband, Neil. He dragged me along after a conversation in the pub where I told him I'd been writing a horror novel. And then I lost contact with him, and then I met him again by accident, and I gave him my details, and then one night he just rang up and said, right, we're having the meeting tonight, come along. And that was in 2003, so getting on for 20 years now.
Yeah, pretty much. That sounds like nothing, but if you think about it, that was before social media and anything like that.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
Not even sure many people had mobile phones back then.
I didn't. I got my first mobile phone in 2004.
Mine was 2005. Mm.
Yeah. Then again, I didn't get a video recorder till 1987, so I've always been a bit behind the times.
We're not early adapters, are we?
No, I'm late followers, more like.
Yeah. You joined Northampton Science Fiction Writers Group in 2003, so you have Ian Watson there, because it was basically his group, wasn't it? And Ian Waits and a few other people.
Yeah.
And were you meeting in the RAF club at the time?
Yeah, we had a brief spate of meeting at the Roadmender, but it clashed with too many gigs. The Roadmender's the local music venue. So we went to the RAF club and we'd meet there. And there were quite a few of us then. I think there must have been about 10 of us or so. Some people came and other people left. But there seems to be a sort of a core of us that have stayed from the very beginning. It's such a useful thing, a writer's group. I mean, I think I was quite egotistical when I first joined and thought, my writing's fantastic. And that soon got that beaten out of me and made maybe more reflective about what I write, let's say. that was really useful to knock you off of your own self-imposed pedestal and bring you into the real world, and it improved your writing as well. So
there's a few things that people might not know about you. So you have now had two novels published.
I've got two novels published and available. I had a science fiction horror one in 2009, I think it was. That ended up sort of being unpublished, but that was all about the publisher is a friend of mine, and he published it, and then I think he wanted to do different things. But I've got two novels published. Two horror novels. One is High Cross, which was published in 2018, and the other is called Dark Choir, which was published this year in April. And that was with an American publisher called Silver Shamrock.
Yeah, we've got that, and I must confess I've not read it yet, but big fan of High Cross.
Oh, yeah. You are?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got quite a following in Northampton, I think, from High Cross. There's a lot of people.
Have I?
Yeah, a lot of people love it. A lot of people have reached out to me and want me to chat to you about that.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so High Cross, it's a very unusual setting, isn't it? So it's a new housing estate, but it's based on like an old housing estate.
So there are, in reality, there are two villages. There's Stamford and Imber. And they were requisitioned by, well, not requisitioned, they were taken over by the military. All the residents were thrown out, and they were used by the military for training purposes, and then the residents weren't allowed to go back in. I think in Imber, the residents are allowed to go back once a year to pay respect to their relatives that are still in the graveyard. So High Cross is a fictional village where this happened, where it was all the residents were forced to leave, and the army used it as a training ground, and the villagers weren't allowed back. But then the village was developed 70 years later by a property developer, and that's people start moving into this village that's laid empty for 70 years. And then that's when the strange things begin to happen.
Well, I think as well, one of the joys about your novel is you have essentially like the old kind of haunted house or haunted location kind of trope going on, but it's very differently dealt with. So you have like a big manor house, which people presume was empty, but somebody has been living there. And she's a very very forceful character, but all of the people who move into the houses, they're all really interesting characters.
Yeah, so when I was writing the novel, before I'd even written the novel, I was really inspired by The League of Gentlemen and Psychoville. And I thought, I'd love to write something like this, but I haven't got any ideas. And then I had this other idea about populating this village that had been deserted for 70 years. And I thought, right, if I get the weirdest characters who have all got a secret to move in, then I think it makes it more interesting than if it's just, you know, Joe Bloggs moves in and then horrible things start happening to them. And I think it serves the story. I mean, the story is about people's fears and desires. The evil force within the village plays upon people's fears and desires. And I think people do have some quite weird fears and desires and things that motivate them. And of course, for the purposes of the book, I try to get the weirdest fears and desires, the weirdest secrets that the people could have in the village to make it more interesting. I don't know if that worked. You as a reader would probably be able to tell me if that works or not.
Works brilliantly well. As well, I could say you've got like a lot of grotesque kind of characters. You probably got some characters you probably root more for because you feel more sympathy with them or as such. Or you've also got like, they might not be nice, but they're essentially, they haven't done anything wrong kind of characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've also got a fantastic sense of humour in there, I think. That really shines through. But then again, we know each other from another area of our lives, and that you used to do stand-up comedy. And
I used to do stand-up comedy with you. And one of the reasons I did stand-up comedy is because a lot of comedians end up becoming writers. And I thought, oh, if I become a famous comedian, then I'll be a famous writer. But stand-up comedy, as you know, Donna, is very difficult. Very frightening, and after think about a year, I don't think my nerves could take it anymore. I don't know what the secret is to making people laugh. I could never work that out. I would go on stage after someone who I thought wasn't as funny as I was, and then everybody would be laughing at them. I'd go on, and there would just be dead silence. There was a gig we did in Rugby, and part of my act was doing the Dalek impression. Where's the doctor? The doctor is a little bit of the Daleks. He lives to be exterminated. Seriously, I will save him, but I need to exterminate him by 5 o'clock because I've got to pick the kids up from school. Now you laugh. In Rugby, nothing. It was just. And at the back, I just heard this voice going, how does he do that then? And
I know the venue you're talking about. So rugby, that place was actually the gig that I used to run.
Yes, I remember. It was awful.
I mean, a lovely, lovely pub run by lovely, lovely people. But that's all I can say. Bless the people who came. They often came regularly, but they were just, it was beyond them. Everything was beyond them. I remember like having.
I imagine that was beyond them then. Yeah, the really Dalek impression, I think, was beyond them.
Like really awesome comedians like Scott Bennett, and he'd leave them cold. And it's like, what?
Yeah. We did one in London, and they all laughed in London. I thought, oh, maybe I should just move to London and do this then. But I didn't do it. So, but yeah, I think that a lot of, I think comedy and horror have something in common. So when you tell the joke, when you tell a joke, you let the audience work it out. I mean, you tell a joke in your I don't know if you've told this joke, and it's my husband likes to wear a massive hat with a feather in it in bed, and I said, "Huh, I hate your cavalier ways." Now the audience hears that, knows the hat, hears the cat, and then puts the two together themselves, and that's what makes them laugh. I think in horror, what scares people is when wait a minute. There weren't footprints. The character walks past and sees some footprints, and the footprints weren't there before. We get the reader to work that out. That's what gives them the chills. So,
it's like sort of like a release of emotion or energy.
Yes.
So that it comes to the same place, fear and laughter. It's amazing that those opposites do react. So, like, I mean, I was telling Neil the other day that when he was feeling very nervous because he's about to go for an interview, that it's a really good trick that I've picked up as a performer is that if you're feeling really anxious, just tell yourself, "I feel excited." And that sounds a bit woo-woo, but you just say, but it does. It helps to replace anxiety with a very similar feeling.
Okay.
So it kind of like lessens it a little bit.
Yeah.
Tip for anybody listening. not all comedians make it as great writers, though. Just make it as great editors, hey?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I gave up comedy and went into writing. Mm-hmm. I found writing easy because you can, if you get something wrong, nobody sees it. You can go and correct it later. The first time someone sees it is an editor, and an editor can then go and correct it. You get something wrong on stage, the audience sees you, and no one laughs, and it's obviously you've bombed. And so I do much prefer writing.
Well, we're going to take that's what you bet you call instant feedback. Like, right, that doesn't work. Let's see.
Yeah,
if we can
instant
move away
feedback.
From it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of instant feedback then. In that case.
Instant facial and projectile throwing feedback.
Definitely, yes.
And so the good thing with having a writing group as well is you've got a selection of esteemed peers who can judge your work before it goes out to the great wide yonder. And I find it's helped me a lot. Do you think it's helped you in getting out there? Because you're now Mr. Big Time Successful Author.
Definitely. I mean, it's helped. Yeah, because I think when I sent High Cross to the publisher that eventually published it, Horrific Tales, he liked it from the get-go. He liked it. And High Cross had, the first few chapters had been workshopped by the group. So they told me what was wrong with it, what works and what doesn't. And you learn lots of things in the writer's group, like point of view, strong characterization, identifying plot holes, that sort of thing. And they become, after you've made that mistake a few times and the writer's group has picked you up on it, then it becomes instinctive and you don't make those mistakes. You learn from those mistakes. The writers group are pretty, I mean, they're very honest when they're workshopping a piece, they're very honest, which is great. Because if they just said, oh, it's wonderful, it's marvellous, then you send it to a publisher and the publisher, well, this is crap. it's not going to work. So, yeah, I mean, talking about nervousness and fear, I mean, when it's my turn to be workshopped, I'm always a bit nervous about what people are going to say, because they think of things that you have not thought of before, ever. I was 3/4 of the way through a really long science fiction horror novel. And I thought it was marvellous. And the writers group basically said, this doesn't work. The whole concept doesn't work. And they were unanimous. All 10 people were unanimous that this didn't work. And I thought, do you know what? They're right. It doesn't. And I'm 3/4 of the way through it. I've spent 6 months on this. So I immediately scrapped it and started writing Dark Choir. When I took Dark Choir to them, they said, well, this does work. So, and now it's been published. So that's the sort of experience you get in a writer's group, you know. So yeah, I think they're invaluable, especially the writer's group I go to.
Yeah, I
must
say,
we haven't seen each other for ages, have we?
No, flipping pandemic. COVID.
Yeah,
it
I wasn't
going to
mention the C word.
We have a few C words.
Yeah.
So not only sort of like the opportunity to sort of like critique, there you go, that's a C word. Meeting people in this lovely pub in a beautiful village. The sandwiches that would inevitably be brought out and thrust before us.
Oh yeah, we had sandwiches for free. The pub just gave us these sandwiches for nothing. Yeah, there was also, do you remember the guy who came up, he was really drunk, and he plonked himself down and went, you're in the writers group, you're the science fiction writers group, aren't you? Yeah, we are. Well, I'm a massive Star Wars fan, and I reckon I've got midichlorians in my bloodstream. And we all sort of sat there, we didn't really know what to say. And he went, I've made a fool of myself, and he got up and walked off. I felt really sorry for that guy. I kind of like, come on, let's talk Star Wars. What's your favourite film, you know? You never know. He could have ended up joining us. But, yeah. Anyway, maybe we'll see him again one day.
Yeah, I think we might have said to him, join us, in that voice. And that probably scared him off.
Yeah. No, I don't think, yeah, that is possible, yes, but I don't think we did, no. Yeah, it's quite interesting, our interfaces with the real world. I mean, we're always having to tell them to turn the music down and the speakers. Or there's the dreaded, like, we sit down, we'll start to workshop with our printouts, and then the football will come on the big screen or something, or a pub quiz will start. That's happened a couple of times, hasn't it?
Yeah. But nice. Get, I mean, eventually we'll have another meeting, I think, but it's all going to be via Zoom, like this.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
We'll have to put our little hands up to make a point and everything.
Oh, right. Yeah. We have to do all that now. Yeah. Well, work has got me used to doing all that sort of stuff. But, well, yeah.
It is what
okay.
It is. How are you doing with your Morris dancing in these times?
Oh, the Morris dancing isn't happening at all. Yeah. Now, you want something horrific. I'm also a Morris dancer as well. So, yeah. that is scary. That is like kind of being one of the people in the Wicker Man that's going to burn Edward Woodward. You know, you turn up in a village on a summer's day dressed like that, you do feel like you are part of a folk horror film.
Yeah. The thing is, so, I don't know how... we're going to get rid of this pandemic without the pagan rites that you and your group perform every significant feast day.
Yes, well, we're not doing anything now. We're not even practicing at the minute. But we used to dance the summer in. We used to go to Brackley and dance the summer in with lots of other Morris sides. at half, we'd meet at 5:30 in the morning. And the pub was open then as well, so you could have a drink at 5:30 in the morning as well. so we didn't do that this year, and I'm surprised the crops haven't failed. What else do we do? We always do Midsummer as well, and we do St. George's Day. We always dance at St. George's Day, which is useful for remembering when St. George's Day is. Oh, that's the time we dance at the canal. That dance at the pub at the canal.
Yeah, St. George's Day is shortly after Valpurgis Night. You should know that as a horror writer.
I should do that, yeah. But I'm not a folk horror writer, you see. So.
No. Now, you're starting to write about some more churchy things, though. There's churches very much definitely creeping into your work, isn't there?
Yeah, there are definitely, Dark Choir, Dark Choir is set in an asylum, but in High Cross there are two vicars in High Cross, two of the characters are vicars. My brother's a church warden, so I had to ask him about the practicalities of ringing church bells at midnight and things like that. Do you actually have a rope or is it on a timer? So it was quite interesting. Last year, I got another friend who's a vicar. And we ended up walking around his church, scrumping for apples at night. And we were about to enter his churchyard. And he said, are you bothered about going in the church, you know, like going in the graveyard after dark? And I went, look, I'm a horror writer. Let's just get in there. So, yeah, we scrumped some apples, me and this vicar. So, yeah. I think churches are great. I mean, there's the abandoned church in Broughton, is it?
Yeah.
That's absolutely fascinating to walk around. I've not walked around there at night, actually.
Me and Neil did some filming there, but nothing spooky. We just thought it's kind of sandy and open. And we did our scene for Groundhog Day, where we did a car falling off the cliff from one of the church walls. Very nice round there.
Yeah.
Didn't have many specific questions for you when I opened this up on Facebook. Scott Wilcock said, when are you going to buy him a drink? Do you know Scott?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, with the proceeds from High Cross. I've spent them all on a new computer, Scott. You're out of luck, mate.
And then we had a cheeky comment from Mark West, who is another writer in our writers group.
Yes. Mark and I, although it's a science fiction writers group, Mark and I are both horror writers. I think Mark's moving into writing thrillers as well. So... he said that every time it's his turn to be workshopped, I give him a kicking, and then every time it's my turn to be workshopped, he gives me a kicking. So, it's sort of a mutual kicking group, really. But he did have. I remember having an argument about internal logic. So I'd written a ghost story where a ghost it can walk through walls, but in one instance it opens a door and goes to, and he said the internal logic in there doesn't work. And I thought, what does he mean by an internal logic? Went back, read this story and thought, oh, that's what he means by internal logic. Yeah. So yeah.
Maybe the ghost really felt like opening a door.
Well, unless it serves the purpose, like, open the door to scare someone. How did that door open on its own? It's the ghost again.
Oh, I'm not putting my face in that. I'll open it first.
Yeah. Yes. Did anyone else get any other questions, or was that it, really?
No, we were rather hoping to poke one of your mates from the Morris Dancers, but he didn't bite.
Ah, right, yes. Yeah. No, it was quite nice. So the Morris bought the book and I signed it for them. And I gave them a dedication at the back of the book. So, yes. But I wrote High Cross before I was a Morris dancer. So there's not a lot of Morris dancing in there. You'd be pleased to know.
It was like, that'll be a good read review. There is insufficient Morris dancing in this book. Oh dear. And I didn't poke Billy Maguire. Billy Maguire is another comedian that we know, and he's always asking after you. He misses you.
Billy Maguire?
Yeah.
Oh,
he was anonymous the poet at one point. He did a festival with us.
Yeah.
Endorsed it.
Did he? Did he? Was he the main one? The main the compare guy, or was he? Is he the Scottish one?
Scottish one.
Is the Scottish one?
Yeah.
Oh yes, yes. Me and Billy, we went out, and when Neil broke his ribs and disappeared, I showed great concern by just going off and sort of getting drunk at the bar. And me and Billy were like the last two standing at 6 o'clock in the morning. This was a few years ago, I might add. Yes. Oh, right. Yeah, well, give him my regards.
Oh, will do. Will do. Yeah. And if people listening don't know that story, that was when we played this festival in Dorset and Sham 69 were headlining because it was very small, yeah. Very small little Bijou festival. And Neil decided that he would do a swan dive, what do you call it?
It's a slam dive, and yeah. He was wearing a kilt, and Billy had persuaded him to take his underwear off during the day, because a real kilt wearer doesn't wear underwear. So Neil said
it's
to me,
it's even worse than I remembered.
I want to crowd surf. Can you lift me up? So he put his foot into my hands. I launched him up. And he crowd surfed for a little bit. Then he hit the floor and he got up and I went, are you all right? He went, no, and walked off. And I thought, well, he's walking, so it can't be that bad. Then you and him disappeared for the entire night because he'd gone and found you and he'd ended up going to A&E with fractured ribs.
Yeah.
So he came back with a load of painkillers and did his comedy set with his fractured ribs.
And if anybody wants to book Ewan Kershaw, he's very professional. He will gig, even though he's in immense pain.
Yeah, it was really funny, actually. He told that story as part of the act. It was hilarious. He's funnier than I remember totally bombing, and like nobody was laughing. The only audience interaction was this guy with a green mohican, really drunk, launched up to the front and started going, yes, mate. I mean, yeah, I could have made loads of jokes about, oh, look, it's the Norfolk accent or something like that. Apologies to any Norfolk listeners. But I was completely terrified by him and just sort of stood there going,
That was
Somebody
nuts.
Help me.
There was this woman in clad head to toe in like leopard skin who sat on Matt Richardson. I'm not sure if that was the year you went actually, but he wouldn't like you because he runs away from Morris dancers.
Most people do. Most people ignore Morris dancers. There's a saying in the Morris, when you're Morris dancing, dance like nobody's watching because nobody is. Apart from some kids. Kids sort of find it fascinating, but, you know, kids are amused by things like, you know, bits of wire and a leaf. So
I was like, I think Morris dancers are brilliant, especially if, like, the landlord of the pub where you've got a gig has decided to book Morris dancers shortly before the comedy gig. And then they're walking to the bar past the stage with the bells on their ankles.
Oh, well, yeah, there was one year, it was the football was on, England versus, you know, the rest of the world. And we walked into the bar when they were trying to watch the match. I think they nearly, you know, killed us. So you try and walk along without making any noise in those things. It's impossible.
Oh,
if you go to the toilet, you're sitting in the cubicle. Jingle, jingle, jingle. Like, no. Oh.
Well, it helps if there's no lock.
Yeah.
It's a shame you guys have not got together. But, you know, social distance Morris dancers, of course, you won't be able to hit sticks because you're too far away.
Well, they tried doing it through Zoom, but they destroyed each other's laptops doing it when they clashed the stick.
Oh dear. Right, I think with this, Paul, I shall finish our conversation here. It has been brilliant. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me
Thank
on
you very much.
The Lemonade Budget for Champagne Social Butterflies. Yeah.
The Lemonade Budget for Champagne Social Butterflies.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, although I should, before we go, I should ask you, do you have any aspirational mantras for the listeners?
Aspirational? Oh,
yeah.
You know,
so like the antithesis to live, laugh, love.
Avoid reality as much as you can. Use alcohol if required.
That sounds like jolly good advice. Paul, okay, thank you then. Very much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Lemonade Budget for Champagne Social Butterflies with Donna Scott. Please like and subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. I love you. Also check out Donna Scott Comedy on YouTube and my website, donna-scott.co.uk. Music, It Looks Like the Future, But It Feels Like the Past by Dr. Turtle on Flush Your Rolex EP.